Have you ever found yourself thinking, if I'd known how to honor my sensitivity sooner, maybe life wouldn't have felt like such a fight to survive? If so, you're not alone. And today's episode explores what it looks like in real life to thrive as a highly sensitive person. My guest co-host is best-selling author Dr. Judith Orloff, and we're talking about her new children's book, The Highly Sensitive Rabbit. It's a sweet story that helps HSP kids and tender-hearted grown-ups build everyday tools for boundary setting, emotional balance, and self-trust. We discuss how to turn so-called crybaby moments into connection, how to reframe empathy as courage, and how to nurture that inner child who still needs to be seen and soothed. This conversation offers fresh insight and gentle practices to help every sensitive soul, young or grown, thrive with confidence and self-compassion. Welcome to Grit and Grace, the podcast for highly sensitive Christian women. I'm your host, Sherry Gregory. Are you tired of the overthinking, overwhelm, and exhaustion that can come with being a highly sensitive person? Are you ready to stop worrying that something is wrong with you and start understanding and nurturing yourself as an HSP? Together, we'll build resilience, practice self-compassion, set healthy boundaries, unlock your creativity, and learn to embrace, not fight, your God-given sensitivity. Let's dig in. Hey friend, I'm so glad to be back with you again, and I'm delighted to introduce you to our guest co-host for today. Dr. Judith Orloff is a New York Times best-selling author, a psychiatrist, and a highly sensitive person. She's the author of the new children's book, The Highly Sensitive Rabbit, a sweet story about a caring cottontail who's shamed for her sensitivities, but learns to embrace them. Dr. Orloff has also written The Genius of Empathy, The Empath's Survival Guide, and Emotional Freedom. In her medical practice, she specializes in helping highly sensitive persons navigate life with greater understanding and self-compassion. Through her writing and teaching, she helps people embrace their sensitivity, steward their physical and emotional resources, and live with greater peace and purpose. Alrighty, I'm always fascinated by how people discover this whole world of sensitivity. Dr. Orloff, how did your journey with highly sensitive persons begin?
Yeah, the reason that I wrote this children's book is because I was a highly sensitive child and I was shamed for my abilities, so I wasn't allowed to talk about what I was picking up. I grew up believing there was something wrong with me. And my healing journey has been to realize that isn't so and to come together with all my abilities and my psychiatric conventional training where I combine both of them. And I have a private practice where I treat highly sensitive people for years and years.
So you've known that you're a highly sensitive person for quite some time. At what stage of your life did you find out that being an HSP is a thing?
I ran a lot from my sensitivities and my intuition, and I had this big car accident when I was a teenager and went over a cliff in a car. Luckily, I didn't get hurt. It was a miracle, but my parents sent me to see a psychiatrist at that point. And it was my psychiatrist who helped me to begin to see this and started me on the path.
Okay. So this is something you've known for a while, for most of your adult life, but you had those experiences of being shamed as a child.
Yes, but I didn't have the verbiage. You know, now there's so many ways to describe it that are good, uplifting, and wonderful, as opposed to making it a disorder.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I still work with women who are like, why do we have to use the word sensitive? And some who prefer using the word perceptive, you know, like they're just so much more comfortable with the word perceptive.
Yes.
So, well, tell us about your new children's book. I love, love, love that you chose to write to children, but I have a feeling that it's not just for children ages 4 through 8. I have a feeling there's a larger audience.
Well, I wanted to write a children's book to help children realize that their abilities are something to embrace and how to deal with some of the downsides, such as shaming. The Highly Sensitive Rabbit is about a sensitive rabbit named Aurora, which is my nickname as an adult. So
I love it.
My story. And how her brothers made fun of her and called her a crybaby and with her. And then, she eventually comes into her abilities and accepting them through the support and love of other animals who came and said, "When I feel overwhelmed, this is what I do. I fly away and I take some alone time, or I set a boundary. So that's able to help me. And I take alone time, set a boundary, and really honor my abilities rather than think of them as bad." And so this book is for children, but it's for the inner child and everyone who has grown up with these sensitivities, or even if you embrace them as an adult. This is the inner child part that you want to take everywhere with you, and you want to protect this part. And you want to make sure this part is heard. You don't want it to rule your life. That's not a good thing. But you do want to hear what the child has to say about things and comfort the inner child when he or she needs comforting. And so hopefully people will read this book with their inner child in hand, and we could all embrace that. And also, as highly functional adults, that we're out in the world and we're not weak. That's the big thing. Like in our society today, they're saying empathy is weak and sensitivity is weak, and it's crazy. And so this is a celebration of sensitivity.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, as I was reading through it, I have no problem admitting it brought me to tears. I mean, my brother and I have four male cousins who are all older than I am. And so I was the crybaby of the family, and that was a very shaming thing. And I have come to realize that I learn a lot from my tears. I've learned when it's safe and appropriate for me to let loose with my tears, and it's not in public. It's not, it's certainly not for manipulative purposes, which is what I heard as a child. Like, you're just doing this to be manipulative. And I never knew what that meant. I just cried because that's what was happening. So I'm wondering if you could speak into that a little bit. What is it with HSPs and crying, and especially with our children? Crying, especially if we're highly sensitive parents, the sound of crying is very overstimulating and can be quite dysregulating. Do you have any wisdom or practical advice for, I don't want to say dealing with, engaging in really healthy ways for both parent and child, if the child is a crybaby and maybe the parent or grandparent or aunt, I'm not trying to keep it to just a parent here. But what do we do with the tears and the energy that it can intensify?
Oh, the screams of a child can go right through you. They're like nature has made them to go right through you. My neighbor had a little baby and now a couple years old, screaming, screaming at home. It's very hard for the parents who are not highly sensitive, but for me, the neighbor who is highly sensitive. But sensitive kids are very loving and very caring. And they care about other people who are hurting. They care about other, people in at school, and even people they don't know. If they see another baby crying, they're going to try and fix it. Now, this is something we can help our children with in terms of setting boundaries, and saying, "Please tell me what's going on, when you're crying, and let's figure out a way for you to calm down." And taking a breath, it sounds simple, but it's so important. So they break the cycle of crying and noise, because it could go on. Tantruming could go on and on and on. And if you have the highly sensitive parent, that's going to excite their central nervous system so that they're not going to be in their centered place. And so I think it's wonderful for highly sensitive parents to realize, "My child's scream dysregulates me sometimes, and that's okay. So I'm going to learn techniques. I'm going to maybe take a bit of, minute or two of alone time if that's all I have, and center myself so I can be the best parent and model the best behavior that I possibly can, because the modeling is so important, as the children do what the parents do. And I've had, a daddy who said, "Do you think it's okay for me to cry in front of my child? Because I'm so emotional too." So it's an interesting question, isn't it? he happened to cry all the time around this child. So the child was young and was put into a therapist role. And we have to find balance. That is, tears could be beautiful, but the body heaving and crying around a little child, they're not going to quite understand what's going on.
Sure.
So, you know, you have to really teach the child certain skills along with their sensitivity so they're not dysregulated by it.
So true. Yeah. And it does start with breathing. When I first found out I was a highly sensitive person, we're going on about 13 years ago. And that was the first thing is I realized, oh, I'm not just overwhelmed in this world. I'm constantly overstimulated. And I don't think I had the word dysregulated yet. And I was so amazed at how quickly some breathing exercises would dial down. It wouldn't solve everything, but it would bring me back to a place that was much more manageable and not so intense.
Exactly. And in the highly sensitive rabbit, Aurora, the rabbit, meets a javelina. And a lot of people don't know what javelinas are, but they're desert creatures that are very noble and beautiful and different. They're considered, you know, they're a little different. And so the javelina comes to Aurora and says, when you're overwhelmed, you need to set boundaries. And this is what I do, and it works for me. So you can try it. And she goes, okay, I'll try it. And the javelina says, I can sit with you and watch. We could watch the moon together, or you can sit alone. But just tell me what you need.
I loved that part where it was like sometimes they were together and sometimes she was alone and both were okay. And I'm like, yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And everyone listening, both are okay.
Yeah.
Because you make a new friend doesn't mean they have to be with you all the time and that you can't set boundaries.
So what does setting boundaries look like with young children? I mean, I'll just tell you right now, many of my listeners and myself included, we were raised where boundaries were just like not a thing. We were supposed to be all things to all people and do nothing but give, give, give. And so boundaries feel selfish, but we are learning them. We are learning them and we are seeing the value they have. And we're recognizing that they allow us to keep being who we are sustainably. We're discovering that boundaries mean we don't crash and burn and you know, not be able to give at all. So we're recognizing they're good. But what does it look like to teach a child boundaries?
The point I try and get across in the book is that a boundary is a loving act. Hmm. It's not punitive. It's not punitive to the other person. You can be in your heart when you say, I'm just so tired, I won't be able to go out tonight. Yeah. No, please understand, I'll miss seeing you, but I can't do it. So if you say it in a very loving way, it's very different than setting boundaries in a punitive way. And that's, people equate boundaries with being punitive. And that's not what I'm suggesting at all. It's just being in your heart and telling your friends, I sometimes have to set boundaries because I get overwhelmed and I get overloaded. I'm a highly sensitive person. And hopefully if it's a good friend, they're going to understand you. But people who aren't good friends might feel rejected by boundaries. And they might feel like you're saying no to them. And this is a rejection. This means you don't love them. And so you have to tell them, I love you. We're such good friends and I'm tired. Please understand that.
That's really helpful. I hadn't thought of the tone and the intentionality of wrapping a boundary in love because I've always thought of boundaries as barriers. I've had to work so hard to get to the point of the boundary. I'm often resentful by that point. But to be able to teach a child to just be honest and to have that loving approach to a boundary, it seems like it would just become very natural.
It is. When they learn it at a young age, when they're adults, it's part of how they are. You know, I've seen children raised like this. And so when they're 22, 23, they just learn how to set boundaries. So it's not a thing. They just do it. That becomes second nature to them. That's the beauty, I think, of a children's book, is that it helps them when they're young and early on, so they don't have to go through what maybe we went through about the shaming and the crybabies and, you know, and being called this name and that name and just feeling terrible about ourselves.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. I love that. When you're talking about a very young child, I know we want to be careful to not label. So what are some evidences that you would say to either look for or that if they're noticed that a child might be showing signs of being a highly sensitive child.
I wrote a book called The Empath Survival Guide, which is the first empath book I wrote. And it gives a lot of quizzes in that book. And one is, how do you know if you have a highly sensitive child, and or some techniques? So I would go to that book to know, but a few things to look for if you have a highly sensitive child. They sometimes don't like to socialize in large groups. So if you have a group of people over and they're up on the stairway looking down at you, you don't have to worry about that because they're processing the event in the way they process it. And it might not be coming down and being with a large group. However, if you want them to socialize, you'll have more luck if you just have one person over. They like that more. They're not overstimulated. If you look at people as a form of stimulation, you can see the child's point of view. Yes, they don't want to get too rattled, and especially if someone is talking a lot. If they have a lot of words bombarding them, that's like too much. I mean, for me personally, it's like, I cannot take that. They're too much talking. You know, the world is just talking too much and I need quiet. But imagine a child who doesn't have the way of expressing that. They just know they feel it around certain people, but they don't know to articulate it. So you might want to have conversations with them, you know, making it a safe place for them to come and talk about what they're feeling. You know, how are you feeling when, you know, I have these people over? Well, you know, I don't feel that good. Or whatever they're going to say. You just gonna say, okay, honey, what do you mean? Can you give me more ideas about that? So you want to understand the point of view so you can honor it and help the child rather than, oh, you're overly sensitive. You need to get a thicker skin, like what my mother told me. It's like you feel like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
But if you engage the child and help them and just say it's okay to take a little time off if you're feeling overwhelmed, that's okay. You want to give them coping mechanisms and you want to make them okay.
Well, I'm hearing two things. One is I'm hearing this beautiful curiosity that you're modeling. You're genuinely curious to learn about the child's lived experience. And simultaneously, you're not shoving a bunch of expectations on the child. Like, you know, the only way to be a good person is to be a charismatic extrovert who loves people. Because that kind of an expectation doesn't have a lot of wiggle room for, like you said, sitting on the stairs, because the kid sitting on the stairs is probably taking it all in. And if one person were to sit next to them with their permission, they'd probably have a fantastic deep conversation that would never be forgotten.
What people do is they feel bad if the child is not responding in a way that you might expect them to. And so for parents, it requires you to shift your point of view a little bit and see it from the child's point of view, and then you can help them. But you could also help them set boundaries so they can socialize with people that they like.
Yeah.
Or go for walks instead of going to a football game. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. Because the highly sensitive child, the roaring and yelling and noise, and I would never go to a football game.
I wouldn't go to something like that unless I had a very good escape plan that was 100% right. Under my control, which of course is part of the problem for the child. They don't have the agency when they're little. They are stuck and their only mode of transportation is the adult. And as adults, we don't think of it from that perspective.
That's great. And you can ask your child, how are you doing, honey?
Yeah.
That's all. Not a big deal. Don't make a big deal out of any of this.
Ooh, I love that. I hate to say it, but the holidays are coming up. And there's a lot of expectations around those times that, you know, you're going to hug and kiss all of your relatives, even if some relatives show up and they are wearing very, very heavy scents or participating in events with the family, because this is a family where everybody does the same thing at the same time at a very high volume. Do you have any ideas for sharing with family members? Let's say the parents have done what you've suggested and they're being very curious and they're being very respectful and they're learning about their child. They're not making a big deal out of it. How might they communicate with family members who still believe that all children have to hug and kiss the relatives or have to do certain things a certain way?
I would talk to them beforehand. You know, and just say, we're so excited about coming. And I just wanted to share something intimate with you or important with you. And I know you don't understand this. My child doesn't like perfume. She just gets very allergic around it. So if you don't mind, if he or she doesn't hug, you know, we would appreciate that. So you could warn them ahead of time, and the ones who don't go along with that, they're people you could warn and they still do it.
Exactly.
You have to kind of help lead the child away or lead yourself away. If you like perfume, I don't like it either. I go to small events or go to the ocean. But a lot of people go to big events. If I did, I would just say I don't hug or I don't shake hands. That's another one I have. But sometimes I do. It's not all the time I feel the same way.
I like that. The first thing you said was you use the term allergy, which people understand. People understand an allergy in ways they don't understand sensitivity. I feel sometimes sensitivity opens the door to a discussion we don't want to have,
That's right.
whereas allergy people are like, oh, okay. They don't want you having to call 911 while you're at their house. And then also, I don't do such and such. I don't do hugs. I don't shake hands. That's not open for discussion. And those are short. And then the conversation can move on.
That's very short. And another good thing is you can tell the child they could always go to the bathroom if they're feeling overwhelmed. So that's helpful.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's many of us. That's our escape plan is 5 minutes in the bathroom, and then we can come back out again. Well, I run a membership called the Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe, and a few of my members have submitted some questions. So the first one said, how can parents support their HSP child sensitivity without making the non-HSP child or children feel overlooked or like there's favoritism?
Ask the non-HSP child what's important to them too. It's not like you just talk to the HSP children about this. You talk to the non-HSP children. Just find out what's important to them. I love talking to Uncle Joe. That information, okay, well, I'll stay attuned to that. So just because someone's an HSP doesn't make them better than anyone else. They just have some needs that aren't typically addressed in modern society. So that's why we're talking about it. But the other children are equal. You want to find out what their needs are too.
And you used a really important word, attuned. So being attuned to all children under your care and making sure the needs get met. That makes sense.
And tell the highly sensitive one, children are different. They have different needs, just like adults are different. And we want to honor their differences and similarities just out of love.
Absolutely. So another mom asked about avoiding codependency. She said, I would love to get insight on how to avoid falling into codependency with an HSP child. My 15-year-old is an HSP and she gets very sad anytime I'm experiencing sadness or any strong emotion. Then she becomes overattentive and tends to over-identify with me emotionally. In other words, she takes on whatever emotion I'm experiencing. This leads me to want to try to hide my emotions from her, which isn't healthy either, because I want her to experience seeing her mom go through difficult experiences and emotions while hopefully modeling healthy coping mechanisms during those times.
Okay.
So, what might this mom be able to do or say, or kind of conversation she might be able to have now that she's noticing that her 15-year-old is being such an empath and is really absorbing her emotions, but the mom doesn't want to just shut down around her because she knows that's not healthy.
15-year-old, this is a perfect time to have this conversation because you want to tell them that you enjoy your emotions. And this is part of being a human being, is being in touch with emotions. And sometimes we get sad, sometimes we get happy, sometimes we're feeling something else. And that I would like, to model with you and tell you it's okay. And you don't have to take on my feelings. I love feeling my feelings, even the difficult ones, because I love growing and changing. And I hope, we can talk about this with yourself, but you don't need to take on my feelings. I don't want you to do that. It's not helping me.
Oh, I love that. And that means that mom or any of us adults need to be able to say, I love feeling my feelings. We need to be at a place that we can say that with honesty. Or I'm learning to love feeling my feelings. I am growing in that area.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful role model. I'm growing in that area. And you can have your own feelings, which are different than mine. And you don't have to take mine on because I'm fine feeling them. Some feelings are hard, true. But I'm not asking you to take them on. I'm just learning to work with them.
So many of my listeners were raised in families and communities where emotions were demonized and reason was deified. And they're learning that we are both, and that we can't have that one without the other. Just doesn't even make any sense. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, I hate to say quick tips, but what would you say to a woman who's like, it's never occurred to me to say, I love my feelings. I love experiencing my feelings. Is there anything that, especially with the emotional health of the child in mind, any advice for a woman who's like, I'd love to role model this, but I'm so far from being there myself? Any encouragement for how she can befriend her own emotions a little bit better?
I mean, that's perfectly okay. If you're starting to befriend your emotions at this point in time, that's wonderful. You know, whenever the right time comes, you want to take advantage of it. You don't have to be at a point where I love my feelings. That's way over here. You can be at, I'm exploring my feelings.
Okay.
I'm learning to be okay with my feelings because I want to be a whole human being and feelings part of it. That's such a good question because not everyone loves, I love my feelings because I know I love growth. And I know I wrote a book called Emotional Freedom, which is all about how to deal with fears, another chapter, how to deal with worry, another chapter, how to deal with anger. So I'm into feelings and the nuances of feelings because I want to be a powerful human being.
Yeah.
And I want to learn how to work with myself and come together in this lifetime, you know, as a whole person. And part of that is learning to deal with your feelings.
Yeah.
And I suggest finding a wonderful therapist to work with. You know, I've had therapists off and on all my life, and or guides or people. I love that. I need that. And it's a joy for me. I started out, I told you my first psychiatrist was the one who opened me up to this. So I love psychotherapy. If you find the right person,
sure, with
the right chemistry, if you don't, they don't have the right chemistry, it's not that effective as far as I'm concerned. But if you really can work with somebody, and so the mother who's never done this before, be easy on yourself. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you haven't done it before. You know, and it's okay to start now. And it's about showing self-empathy. You're not weak and you're not any of the things that people are telling you, but you might be in an environment where other people don't agree with what I'm saying. In that case, you have to kind of re-envision your life to at least find one other person and to be part of your community.
Yeah.
You know, find other people who can help you along the way. That's what the highly sensitive rabbit is. It's about how to find other animals along the way to give you guidance. And so we can't do this alone. You know, it's very hard. I mean, as a child, I was alone. I was an only child. I didn't have any grandmothers or role models or anyone to talk to me like we're talking today. And so it's very painful. But if we can open up to community and begin to trust others, like-minded others. It's not everyone's going to understand. They're just not.
No.
If you find like-minded others, it can really take the pressure off and help you to explore this in yourself.
It feels so good to know that there's others like us. And I agree with you. I know some people are like, well, being an HSP is my superpower. And I'm like, everybody has their strengths. I'm not trying to wave the superpower banner. But knowing that the way I am in the world is within the normal bounds for an HSP, even though it's very abnormal from my family of origin, it makes me feel a lot better when I'm hanging around other HSPs. And they're like, they're saying me too, even though it's not the exact same thing, but it's the overall overstimulation or overthinking. I just have to circle back around to this idea. I love feeling my emotions. You know, last night I couldn't sleep for a couple of hours because of something I was worrying about. It did not occur to me to say to myself at that moment, I love feeling this emotion. This makes me human. This is part of my growth. This is part of my learning. I was just frustrated. I couldn't sleep. What a different approach it might have been for me to be, this is part of the human experience, and to have some of that self-empathy or self-compassion. So the first thing I'm going to suggest to all of my listeners is that I think we all need a copy or two or three of the Highly Sensitive Rabbit, first of all, for ourselves, right? And then we can be sharing it with others, whether it's children or other adults who have that inner child that would respond to it. I do have to ask, why did you choose the Sonoran landscape? Is that a place that you happen to love, or is that something related to your illustrator?
Well, we all, the illustrator, my co-author, Jen, and I all love the Sonoran Desert. And most children's books are set in forests.
Yes.
So we thought we'll have another environment, the beauty of the desert that maybe many children haven't experienced, except those that live down there. And so we wanted to create a different kind of environment that they could learn. In the back of the book, there's a list of the creatures, the javelina, the wren, the skunk, and who they are and how they are in the desert. And so it's a way of educating kids about the desert too. And yeah. Oh, it's another beautiful, wonderful environment, how the forest isn't just the only place. And this world is filled with glorious places.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great metaphor for the HSP. That's a little less common. There's more misunderstanding, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the desert is just dry and barren, as opposed to, I grew up in Southern California. And so I grew up going hiking in Joshua Tree, for example. And I love the desert unless it's 120 degrees, in which case, not so much. You know, as we wrap up here, if you could go back and give one piece of advice to your younger self or to your own inner child, what would you say?
Trust your intuition.
Hmm.
And one day it's going to get so much better than this.
Hmm.
So have faith.
And then why do you feel that sensitivity is needed today? It is so easy to look at the headlines and look at everything that's going on and be like, oh, I personally just want to bury my head in the sand, wait until everything gets better, and then come back out. But I know that as a mature adult, that's not an option. But it doesn't feel like sensitivity, that there's any room for sensitivity.
But in a way, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on anywhere outside yourself. Mm. If you put values straight, and if you believe that sensitivity is a great thing for yourself, and you know, I believe it can save humanity.
Yeah.
You know, I have really strong feelings about it. And so regardless of what's going on outside, I'm on my path. I'm teaching others. I'm working on myself. I'm gathering with others, HSPs. And the reason I wrote a children book is so that they could be in good shape when they inherit the world.
Yeah.
And they're going to inherit the world soon. These children need to be in good shape. They need to have strategies. And I wanted to offer that in The Highly Sensitive Rabbit. Very simple. It's not heady strategies. It's very, very simple. So I don't want people to get too heady about this whole thing about being highly sensitive. And so that's why it's important to have children be okay now, as okay as we can make them in terms of helping them.
I so appreciate Dr. Orloff sharing her heart for preparing the next generation. And it really frames her new book as so much more than just a cute kids book. It's actually a tool for HSPs of all ages. The Highly Sensitive Rabbit follows a tender-hearted bunny named Aurora, who worries deeply about the world and the creatures around her. When a flash flood destroys her family's burrow, she has to learn how to thrive by honoring her sensitivity, using breathing techniques, taking time alone, and setting healthy boundaries. Along the way, Aurora discovers that her empathy and gentleness are strengths that help her connect with others and help her fully enjoy the beauty around her. Beautifully written and illustrated, this picture book draws from Dr. Orloff's work on thriving as an empath. It offers simple, practical ways to care for a sensitive heart, plus a short section at the end that teaches about the plants and animals of the Sonoran Desert. If you'd like to get your own copy of The Highly Sensitive Rabbit or gift it to a tender soul you love, you'll find all the details at sherrygregory.com/episode299, and you'll also find a link in the show notes. Thank you for listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast for highly sensitive Christian women. I hope this episode leaves you feeling encouraged, equipped to thrive, and reassured that your sensitivity truly is a strength. Be sure to follow in your favorite podcast app and share this episode with a friend. Now, if you're brand new to the whole HSP concept, come take the Am I a Highly Sensitive Person quiz. You'll find that link in the show notes. And remember, God created you sensitive. In Christ, you are always strong. You know, Dr. Orloff reminded us how essential community is for highly sensitive persons, and I could not agree more. The Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe is where we practice everything that we talk about here at Grit and Grace, boundary setting, self-compassion, and thriving as an HSP Christian woman. The cafe is a cozy, Christ-centered space where you can connect with like-minded women who truly get what it means to live tender-hearted in a thick-skinned world. Now, technically, the doors to the cafe closed a few weeks ago and won't open again to the public until spring of 2026. But since you're a Grit and Grace listener, consider this your personal invitation to slip in through the side door before month end. You'll find all the details at sherrygregory.com/cafe. Because your sensitivity is not a flaw to fix, it's a strength to celebrate.